Welcome to another episode of Commission Chats. I'm your host, John Scapini. Commission Chats is a podcast that takes you behind the scenes of the United States Sentencing Commission. Today is part 7 of our Problem Solving Courts miniseries, where we'll be joined by Judge Reggie Walton of the United States District Court for the District of Columbia. My colleague Lori Baker spoke with Judge Walton about the Reclaiming Our Lives program in the district. If you missed any of the other episodes in this miniseries, they're available on both Spotify and iTunes. I'll now pass it over to my colleague, Lori.
Good afternoon, Judge Walton.
Good afternoon.
How are you today?
Busy.
I'm sure you are. I appreciate you taking the time out to talk with us today. As you know, we're doing a podcast series on problem-solving courts. I've had the opportunity to visit your court in person, so I'm glad to have the chance to talk with you today. But let's just start by talking a little bit about you, how long you've been on the bench, and how you first became involved with problem-solving courts.
Well, I hate to say it or admit it, but I've been a judge for over 40 years. I spent about 18 and a half years on the local trial court, and I've been on this court approximately 22 years now.
And how long have you been involved with your reentry court?
I think this is our 7th or 8th year.
Okay. And what is the name of your reentry court?
Reclaiming Our Lives.
Reclaiming Our Lives. Can you tell me how you got that name?
We actually, at the time, we were considering a change because it was just called the Reentry Court. We actually solicited input from the participants in the court at that time, and they were the ones who collectively came up with the title.
I think that's great that you solicited that input from them and it was actually named by your participants. So tell me a little bit about the program. How does it operate?
Well, as I said, I've been serving as a judge for a number of years, both on the local court and on the federal court. And one of the concerns that consistently was, bothered me was the recidivism rate. And I felt that we had to try and do something to reduce the level of recidivism. And so I had discussions with the probation department about what we could do to try and address that population that are under supervision who are most likely to engage in further criminal behavior. And we got a buy-in from the probation department to do this. And then in order to preserve money, we didn't want to have a defense counsel who was being paid from the Criminal Justice Act to represent the individuals who were in the court. So we got the federal defender to agree that they would represent everybody who was in the court, so that wouldn't increase the amount of money we had to pay for defense services. And then we had to get a buy-in from the United States Attorney's Office, the prosecutor's office. And that was a challenge because initially, they were concerned about agreeing to have individuals participate in a court process that could result in the reduction of their term of supervision because they were fearful that if someone's term of supervision was reduced and if during the time when otherwise they would have been under supervision, they committed a serious crime, that they would be criticized for having participated and agreed to the early release or early termination of supervision of individuals who were being supervised by the court. So initially, the first 2 years, we really weren't focusing on that most at-risk population because of that concern. And ultimately, we were able to convince the United States Attorney's Office that we should focus on a more at-risk population because we determined that many of the individuals that we had in the court at its inception were probably going to be successful in any event based upon their history and the nature of their conduct. So one of the things the U.S. Attorney's Office insisted on was that all of the individuals who would be admitted into the reentry court, regardless of who they were sentenced by, that those sentencing judges would have to agree to relinquish supervision and transfer supervision to me. Because the U.S. Attorney's Office felt that there had to be accountability, and that accountability would best be accomplished if the same judge operating the reentry court also had the authority to revoke if violations were committed by the participants. And we had a vote in our judges meeting, and the judges agreed that they were willing to relinquish jurisdiction and have jurisdiction over these individuals transferred to me. So at that point, after about a 2 year when we weren't focusing on that population, we then started to focus on the most at-risk population other than sex offenders. So the probation department will evaluate individuals as they're being released from the Federal Bureau of Prisons to assess which individuals are most likely to engage in further crime and therefore would qualify for participation in the reentry court, or the judges themselves who sentence individuals can make a recommendation that individuals be considered for entry into the court. And those individuals are then assessed by probation. If they're determined to be acceptable as participants, the U.S. Attorney's Office is notified, and then the U.S. Attorney's Office has to make an assessment as whether they think the individuals are qualified. And if they do, then the individuals are admitted into the reentry court.
Tell me a bit about the expectations of your program participants. How long are they in the program, and what are they expected to do in order to complete?
It's a one-year program. They may be on supervision for more than 1 year, but it's a one-year program when they're actually participating in the reentry court process. And initially, I will meet with the participants every 2 weeks, and I meet with them collectively so that we try and create a camaraderie between them and have them work together as a team to try to help each other succeed. And after maybe a couple months, we will then go to a monthly hearing that we have. Before the hearings are conducted, I will meet with the probation department, the federal defender, and also the U.S. Attorney's Office to have an assessment made as to how individuals have been doing in the interim when they were last before me. And then we go into court and we have all the individuals in court, if possible. Sometimes we will permit individuals to participate in the hearings remotely if they have a job and it would interrupt their ability to maintain their employment if they had to come to the courthouse. So under those circumstances, we will permit those individuals to participate through the Zoom format. And they come in, their cases are individually called. The probation department will stand up and give a review of how well they've been doing, any good things they've been doing and negatives. And then I will have a personal interaction with the participants, and hopefully they've done well. And I congratulate them and encourage them to continue to do well. Unfortunately, there are individuals who haven't done well. And I will, you know, give them a tongue lashing, and maybe at some point, if they continue to do poorly, or depending upon the nature of the non-performance or non-compliance, I may have to decide to actually revoke their supervision and remove them from the reentry court, which doesn't mean they can't be readmitted if they show that they're worthy of readmittance. But we've had about a 70% success rate over the tenure of the court, which I think is pretty good considering the nature of the population that we're dealing with.
Are there any particular success stories that come to mind?
Yes, there was one individual, and unfortunately, I haven't been able to get back in touch with him, but he hasn't come back into the system. We've only had two individuals in the 8 year operation of the court who've been rearrested. We have, unfortunately, had just recently two individuals who were in the court who were murdered. What the circumstances were of those events, I don't know. But obviously, that's a sad event when, individuals who you develop a rapport with unfortunately had their lives taken. But like I said, it's a very rigorous program. The individuals have to participate in programs to try and, reprogram their thought process. If they need to have mental health intervention, they have to do that. If they need to participate in substance abuse treatment, they have to do that. And one of the principal things that we require is they acquire employment. And most of the individuals are either in employment. We've had several who've gone through training programs. I know of one individual who completed a plumbing program, and another individual who completed an electronic program and now is working as an electrician. So we have had some significant successes, but the one individual, he was one of the younger participants, and he was in high school at the time, and he said he wanted to go to college. And I don't know if he ultimately went to college because he hasn't stayed in contact with us, but he did graduate from high school. He got his GED. As far as we know, he's still working. He did successfully complete the program and therefore had 1 year of his supervision reduced. Last we heard, he was in some type of an education program, but I don't know exactly how far he has gone. But like I say, he has not been rearrested as far as we know, and therefore he has not come back into the system. And he had a very significant record. So I think the fact that whatever we did that caused him to turn away from a life of crime, I think worked.
Absolutely. So you spoke earlier about the importance of the collaboration between the court, the U.S. Attorney's Office, the Federal Defender's Office, and the Probation Office. What about other agencies in the community?
We do have a partnership with a number of agencies. The Mayor's Office has a returning citizen office, and they work with us very closely. And they have a job program where individuals can participate in those programs to gain skills necessary to find employment. And then we have a number of other entities that work with us. We also have mentors. And the two mentors that we have, both themselves were in the criminal justice system at one point. They have turned their life around, and they've been living a crime-free life for years. And because of their prior history and the credibility that they have with the participants because of their prior history, I think that is also an essential component of the reentry court process.
Are there any particular challenges that you face with your reentry court?
Well, I think the biggest challenge, obviously, is you have individuals who tend to have very lengthy criminal records. Many of them have not been employed for any significant period of time, some never. Many of them don't have the job skills they need to maintain a job, and that is the ability to accept supervision and to be able to work with coworkers. And those are things that we have to try and change as far as their, you know, mentality is concerned, and their appreciation of what comes or what's expected of someone who's going to maintain employment. I think the hardest thing is to just change the mindset of individuals who are participating in the program because of the life that they've lived up to that point. And you really have to have them refocus on what life is supposed to be about and what type of things they need to do in order to be successful. And I think several things are critical. One, I think it's important that they have a job. I think that's very important to keep them from going back and engaging in further criminal behavior. If they have a family, especially children, I think it's important to try and get them to reconnect with their children, because I think when individuals do that and they come to the appreciation of how important they are as parents, I think that can be a tremendous deterrent from them engaging in further crime. And as I said, the process of trying to get them to rethink, you know, how they should be living their life, I think obviously that's a critical component also.
What do you find the most rewarding about your work with this program?
The fact that you see people changing. And the fact that they appreciate the importance of their change. One of the young men who, it really brought tears to me, because he stood up and he said, "Judge Walton," and the courtroom was full, the other participants were there. He said, "Can I just tell you something?" And I said, "Yes, sure." He said, "You know, you're the father I never had." And, you know, one of the things, unfortunately, I've observed in my 40 years as a judge in sentencing many individuals, especially young men, is one of the things I first look at when I read a pre-sentence report is, did the individual have a father in their life? And even if they had a father, was it a good father? And unfortunately, the reality is that it's an aberration that you have someone who came from a good home with a father involved in their life who ends up in the criminal justice system. It does happen, but it's an anomaly. Most of the individuals I see who are young men did not have the type of father support that I had. And to feel that you are, in fact, you know, sort of playing that father role for these individuals, I find very fulfilling.
What advice would you give to someone who is looking to start an alternative court in their district?
I think it's critical because I know there had been some evaluations done several years ago by the administrative office regarding reentry courts, and they were not extremely positive. And I think one of the problems is that I don't want to denigrate any particular participants or judges, but I think it's critical. I mean, it's good to, you know, have a judge who wants to, you know, do this type of work, but it also has to be a judge who appreciates with the population that you're dealing with that you have to set limits and you have to be willing to impose those limits. And people have to appreciate who are participating in the reentry court, that there are expectations. And if those expectations are not fulfilled, there are consequences. Because if people who we're dealing with in the reentry court don't feel that there are consequences and appreciate that there will, in fact, be consequences for inappropriate and aberrant behavior, I think they're going to continue to engage in that behavior. So I think you should have high expectations, but a great appreciation from the participants that if they don't meet those expectations, that there are going to be some type of consequences. And we have gradual, unless they commit a new crime or something of that nature, our sanctions are graduated. So we may start out just, you know, taking some of the time away from them that otherwise they've been credited for participating in the court. We may make them engage in some other type of intervention as a result of the misbehavior they've engaged in. But we may make them do some additional hours of community service. So we try and graduate the sanction up until the point that we have to decide that revocation and sometimes reincarceration is necessary.
Is there anything else you want to share with us about your reentry court or problem-solving courts in general?
It's something I think that, you know, other courts should think about doing and not shy away from the challenge that comes from having a reentry court and the appreciation that you're not going to be 100% successful. But to the extent that you can improve the outcome, you know, percentage of those individuals who are participating in supervision, I think it's a positive. I think, you know, a lot of times it does cost more money. There's no question that the probation department has to spend additional funds to supervise individuals in the reentry court because the probation officer who is the principal probation officer for the participants has a smaller calendar than the other probation officers. And the interventions that we implement will tend to cost more funds than otherwise would be the case for individuals who are just on normal supervision. But I think you have to look at the broader picture of how much you're saving society and the system and the taxpayers by successful participation in the program. Because if you can keep somebody from going back into prison, considering the cost of incarceration, I think in the long run, you make a tremendous economic and social contribution to America.
Absolutely. Well, thank you very much for spending time with us today and sharing information about your program. And we wish you luck moving forward with your reentry court.
Well, thank you very much. It was a pleasure speaking to you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Commission Chats. Stay tuned for more episodes in our Problem Solving Courts miniseries. For more information on problem-solving courts, visit our website, ussc.gov, and hover over the Education tab to access all of our problem-solving courts resources. Commission Chats is now available on Spotify and iTunes, so be sure to follow along with us there. If you'd like to receive the latest news from the Commission, you can find us on LinkedIn, or we are at the USSCGov on X. That's all for now. I'm John Scapini, and thanks for listening to Commission Chats.